We've been talking about what it means to be called to freedom. We've taken our text from Galatians, the fifth chapter. In Galatians 5, beginning at verse 1, the apostle says, "For freedom, Christ has set us free. Stand therefore, and do not stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery." Being a Christian entails the ability to approach the world around us in a completely different way. Knowing about God means that we don't approach the world using the tools that the broken world supplies. Now, Solomon was a wise king, and of course, we're familiar with how Solomon was given the opportunity to ask for anything that he wanted from God, how Solomon asked for wisdom so that he could lead the people of God in the most appropriate way. And the book of Ecclesiastes, then, is a description of Solomon reflecting on everything that he saw around himself and really reflecting on some of the things that he had done personally. Solomon called a lot of the things that he had done, a lot of the things that he saw, vanity. That's surprising because he talks about wisdom as vanity. That's not something that I would have described as vanity, because I think I probably had the wrong concept of what it means to say that something is vanity. When I say that wisdom is vanity, when I say that great accomplishments are vanity, we're going to talk about that this morning, I'm not suggesting that they have no purpose. I'm not suggesting that they're totally empty, because that's not the meaning of this word. This word vanity means something that has a limited purpose. And when we forget that it has a limited purpose, we misuse it and we start thinking that it is the overarching purpose. So this morning, Ecclesiastes, the second chapter, Solomon will reflect on great accomplishments. And at the conclusion, Solomon will conclude that great accomplishments are vanity. So let's read. This is Ecclesiastes, the second chapter, and we'll begin in verse 4 and read down through verse 11. "I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and parks, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water to water therefrom the forest where trees were reared. I bought men servants and maid servants. I had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of herds and flocks above all that were before me in Jerusalem. I gathered me also silver and gold, the treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers, the delights of the sons of men, musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. My wisdom remained with me." That's what he got from God. "Whatever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced because of all my labor, and this was my portion from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hand had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and striving after the wind. There was no profit under the sun." There's a certain vanity that's associated with great accomplishment. Now remember what vanity means, something that's of only limited usefulness. There's a vanity that is associated with the great works fallacy. You know, in fact, most of our life is mundane and really pretty pedestrian. But it's of great usefulness. We don't do many great things. Matthew, the 10th chapter, beginning at verse 40. Jesus is speaking to the apostles. He said, "He that receiveth you receiveth me. He that receiveth me receiveth him that sent me. He that receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. He that receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward." And then listen to the way that he describes that. "Whoever gives to drink unto one of these little ones a cup of cold water only, in the name of a disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward." Just a cup of cold water. That's the work that we engage in most of the time. We just got finished putting together some Barnabas baskets and distributing those to people who, in the view of the elders in the congregation, needed a little bit of encouragement. They'd had a hard year. And there was nothing special about that. We didn't take away the hurt. We didn't take away the difficulties that they had experienced. But the ladies put together these Barnabas baskets, and it helped. That's the thing that we could do. That was the cup of cold water that we could offer to a disciple. And if you received a Barnabas basket, you probably know that it helped. If you put them together and you made it possible to give them to people, you know that it helped. Most of life is pretty mundane. In Matthew, the 13th chapter, beginning at verse 31, Jesus tells a parable. He says, "The kingdom of God is like a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds. But when it's grown, it's the greatest among herbs. It becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof." Another parable he spoke unto them: "The kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which a woman took, hid in three measures of meal till the whole was leavened." These little things that we do, the mundane things that we do, not great things, the little things, the mundane things that we do, add up to a lot. In Matthew, the 13th chapter, and continuing the reading, but this time dropping down to verse 54, you see that what Jesus did, for the most part, was really pretty mundane. Think about this. Verse 54, "When he was come into his own country, he taught them in their synagogues." Nothing special about that. They had other teachers in the synagogue. "Inasmuch that they were astonished, and they said, whence hath this man this wisdom and these mighty words or works? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary, and his brethren James and Joseph, Simon and Judas, and his sisters? Are they not all with us? Whence then hath this man all these things?" And they were offended at him. He didn't do any great thing. He just went into the synagogue and he taught. Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor, save in his own country and in his own house." And he did not many mighty works there because of their unbelief. Oh yes, Jesus did some mighty works, but he didn't do them there. They largely rejected Jesus because he was so pedestrian. Luke, the 10th chapter, excuse me, the 16th chapter and the 10th verse. Luke reminds us of something that we know. Jesus has taught a parable to them, and he begins to explain what the parables mean. He says, "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. He that is unjust in least is unjust also in much. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you trust true riches? If you've not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own?" We demonstrate how we feel by the mundane things that we do. But you know, the problem is focusing on the great, focusing on the overwhelming stuff, keeps us from doing the good things. Zechariah, the fourth chapter, is an important passage. Zechariah is one of the prophets during the time that the children of Israel were rebuilding Jerusalem after the Babylonian captivity. They had just begun laying the foundations. In Zechariah, the fourth chapter, beginning at verse 6, the word of the Lord came to Zechariah, and he says, "Then he answered and spake unto me, saying, This is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, Not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord of hosts. Who art thou, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel thou shalt become a plain. He shall bring forth the headstone thereof with shoutings, crying, Grace, grace unto it. Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house." Now, a lot of people looked at the foundation and said, "Well, that's not much." And they're right. That's not much. But his hands will also finish it. "And you will know that the Lord of hosts has sent me unto you, who has despised the day of small things. They shall rejoice, they shall see the plummet in the hand of Zerubbabel with those seven and the eyes of the Lord which run to and fro through the whole earth." Life's mundane. Think about how it is when you go to work. You work at the same job for 30 years, and maybe you accomplish one monumental task. Most of what you do is just the same old stuff. Matthew 23, verse 11, Jesus says, "He that is greatest among you shall also be your servant. Whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted." Don't fall prey to the great works fallacy. We get so enamored of great works that we become like Solomon. Solomon didn't say work is vanity. Solomon said great works are vanity. Now let's think a little bit about what Solomon did. He rebuilt the temple, a fantastic undertaking. This is a artist reconstruction of what the Temple Mount must have looked like. And it wasn't just that he built a house on the Temple Mount. He built the Temple Mount. This was a fantastic undertaking. And over here on the left, you see the ruins of one of the palaces that Solomon built. Solomon built great things. He built huge cisterns and aqueducts that would bring water into Jerusalem. He built pools so that he could water all of the trees that he planted. We marvel at someone like Thomas Jefferson, who brought trees from all over the world to his farm. Solomon did it way before Jefferson did it. Great things. Andrew Carnegie built Carnegie Hall. How many people have heard of Carnegie Hall? It's a great monumental building. I've been inside of it. It is so incredibly impressive. What about Henry Ford? He made Model T's. Do you know the Model T is the biggest selling car that's ever been produced? I couldn't believe that. It surpasses even the 1966 Mustang. You have to go a long way to surpass the Mustang. Henry Ford built the Model T. And he built an assembly line. More than just a Model T, he came up with a way to build Model T's. He accomplished something great. This guy down here at the bottom, we're not as familiar with him as we are Henry Ford. That's Dr. Porsche. And he built Volkswagens. That's an old Volkswagen, an old Beetle. You don't see those as much anymore. But when I was a kid, everybody knew what a Beetle was. He accomplished some incredible things. It's not just buildings like John D. Rockefeller or Andrew Carnegie might have put together. It's concepts. And they did some fantastic things. Now I want you to think for just a minute. In spite of what Al Gore said, this is the guy who really did invent the internet. His name is Tim Berners-Lee. And he's the one who came up with a way to share information between different researchers. He was a scientist. He was working at CERN, and he was disturbed by the fact that it was so hard to share information with fellow researchers. And so he put together the language that we're so familiar with that starts out HTTP. He did that. You know what? He didn't make a penny off of it. He never patented it. He gave it away freely. He made it available to everybody that wanted to use it because his conviction was this was something that was for the good of all men. Fantastic accomplishment. The only thing he got out of it was he became a knight. Then there's this guy, Martin Shkreli. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. I'm not sure. He built one of the greatest investment firms that's ever been built, Turek Investments. Had a fantastic model. He would go out and he would look for companies that had patents on medicines for which there was no generic equivalent. He would buy those companies. And once he had the company in his pocket, he would raise the price of that medicine. He raised the price of an anti-parasitic drug. The name is, maybe I need to get Ted to tell me how to pronounce that. Daraprim, something like that. He raised the price of a pill from $13.50 per pill to over $750 a pill. He made a lot of money. And he built Turek into one of the major investment houses. Now, unlike Sir Tim Berners-Lee, Martin Shkreli is serving time in the federal prison at Allenwood, Pennsylvania, for defrauding his investors. He made something great. Dr. Tim Berners-Lee made something great. What was the difference? You see, great accomplishment that's inspired by greed is vanity. Absolutely. Luke, the 12th chapter. He spake a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully, and he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my funds, my fruits. He said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns. I will build greater, and there I will bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall these things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Great accomplishment coupled with greed is vanity. Great accomplishments sometimes happen, and they're not associated with greed. Now let's think about Solomon again. There is earthly recompense for human labor. If you work hard, you will prosper. But that's not the real reward. You see, this man that thought, I've worked hard, I prospered, I have my reward, was totally mistaken. Transitory joy is a poor form of compensation. Now, it's good that we should reflect on what we do. And when we do, we discover that we're never far from God, and that if we separate ourselves from God, all of our labor, all of our weariness, all of our pain is just vanity. But to think about the way that we live our lives and to think about our position is the first step towards doing good. You see, mindless pursuit is of little value. Mindless pursuit is not the same thing as mundane and pedestrian. Remember, I said most of what we do is pretty mundane. Some people spend their time pursuing mindless things. Solomon said, I made me great works. He didn't spend his time on mindless endeavors. The Emperor Domitian, it is said, spent his time trapping and killing flies. He spent his time doing nothing. I get caught up in that. I spend my time playing solitaire on the computer. I spend my time looking at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I spend all of my time just looking at news feeds. Sometimes I need to step back and think about what I'm doing. What a waste. How tragically sad that I have been given 24 hours in a day, and that's the way I used it. Now, I'm not saying that we'll accomplish something great. There's a certain vanity that's associated with great works. In the first place, it's only partial. Great works are just partial. It's not satisfying. great works are exaggerated. Great works are the things that we see all the time, and we want to be a part of it, but it doesn't take into account the uneventful days. Great works are selfish for the most part. Shkreli built a wonderful company. He did it so that he could satisfy himself. When you think about things that people that accomplish great works, think about how often they talk about their life in terms of I. They never considered that what they were doing was for the benefit of somebody else. That's the vanity of great works. And it's so superficial. They never reflect on conscience. They never reflect on right and wrong. They never reflect on righteousness. They never reflect on responsibility. They only want to do great works. And it's a terrible waste. Think about Solomon's works. That's where we began. Solomon did great things. But Solomon, to his credit, started in the right place. The first thing Solomon did was he built God's house. Matthew, the sixth chapter. And at verse 33, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mountain said, "Seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you." Start with God. He wasn't like some of the people who had returned to Jerusalem. And when they saw Jerusalem was in ruins, instead of building Jerusalem, they built their own houses. They took care of themselves first. Haggai, the first chapter, beginning at verse 1, "In the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of Jehovah by Haggai, the prophet, unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, the governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest, saying, Thus speaketh Jehovah of hosts. The people say, It is not time for us to come, for the time for Jehovah's house to be built. Then came the word of Jehovah by Haggai the prophet, saying, Is it time for you yourselves to dwell in your sealed houses while his house lays waste?" You see, they saw that there was much to be done, and they started with their own. Start with God. We read of Solomon's buildings. They are great works. But he started to worry about doing great works. And the fallacy of great works took hold of him. Great works are great. Good works are better. We're not going to accomplish very much, but we're going to accomplish what we can. I'd like to say I could clean up all the trash in the oceans. Wouldn't that be a great thing? Wouldn't that be an accomplishment? I can't do that. But I can recycle one can. I can't convert the world. But I can reach out to my friends and neighbors. I can tell them about God. The fallacy of great works. Do you know the the most famous statements that Jesus ever made are statements that were made to just one individual. Think about that. John 3 at verse 16. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. You know how many people heard that? It wasn't great throngs. It wasn't thousands of people. It was a conversation that Jesus had with a man named Nicodemus in the middle of the night. John, the fourth chapter. God is a spirit. They that worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. It wasn't great throngs that heard that statement. It was one woman that Jesus encountered at a well. A lot of what Jesus did was just done with one person. It wasn't something fantastic. It wasn't the Billy Graham crusade. It wasn't the first great awakening, Whitehead preaching to thousands of people. It was just one individual. And God frees us from the thought that we have to save the world. I'm thankful that he did. But he also expects us to save what we can. If you're here today, whether you're joining us via Zoom from home or you're here in the auditorium, if there's something we can do to help you start on this road to avoiding the fallacy of great works, we want you to tell us. We want to help you. Put on Jesus. Become his servant and accomplish what Jesus wants you to accomplish. Again, if there's something we can do to help you, if you want to put on Jesus in baptism, we'll help you do that anytime. If you want to be more consistent about your service to God, if you want to return to him, having begun but then getting sidetracked, repent and he will forgive. You're not off the road completely. Return. Just like Peter did.